back, episode 132 of the Ranting Rangers podcast, in partnership with Inside the Rink. I'm your host, Jacob Berkowitz, and I'm alongside co-host Brett. And in this playoff episode, we're honored to have on former NHL player and NHL Network analyst Mike Rupp. We're going to be discussing the Rangers' 2-0 series lead over the Washington Capitals, as well as Rupp's time in the NHL, especially during the playoffs. Also, before we get to it here, I do want to mention that you can watch NHL Network analyst Mike Rupp on NHL Now and NHL Tonight throughout the whole Stanley Cup playoffs. And yeah, let's get to it. Forgot to mention this in the intro, our next podcast episode will be released Wednesday morning. And we're back with former NHL player and current NHL Network analyst, Mike Rupp. Mike, how's it going?
Good. Good, fellas. How are you guys doing?
Doing well.
Pretty good. The first question here is, you were at the game when the Rangers had their full line brawl versus the Devils, but we're at the concession line when it happened. My question, what arena has your favorite food, and what was your favorite city to go to eat with the team?
Oh, man. Favorite city for food. It's a tough one. I loved going out to Vancouver. Was pretty good food. I like seafood, like sushi. There are tons of options out there. You can't go wrong. We go to Nashville. I'm a big barbecue guy too. We get the barbecue down there. But I'd probably say Vancouver. I think Vancouver has some of the best restaurants. As far as arena food, there's a lot that Montreal's pretty good. Montreal's got some good arena food, especially in the press box there. So that was always a good one.
Nice. You famously played for the Danbury Trashers in the UHL during the lockout. What was it like going down to that league to play? Like, what was the competition level like for you? And how different was that style of hockey? And also just kind of want to know what that experience was like in general.
Yeah, I mean, the hockey was actually really good. It was there was a trickle-down effect because of the NHL lockout. So you had players every league got better, right? The American Hockey League at the time was better because it had, better quality players playing in that. And then it kind of spilled over and pushed some players to the East Coast League. And there's some good East Coast League players that kind of got pushed out and had to go to other leagues like the UHL. So on United Hockey League, it was fun. It was a blast. I mean, great stories coming out of there. Met some great people in Danbury. It was fun for me because, I think that people assume that because you play in the NHL, you should be able to go to a league like that and just score at will. I'll put it this way. It was really fun because I could play hockey with the way I did as a kid and not so much as a pro, where basically, I could hold on to the puck, I could skate the puck up ice, I can go from my end into the other end, can kind of dictate play. That stuff felt cool because I haven't really done that since junior hockey, probably, right? And but I couldn't score. I tried to score as much as I could, but I had like 5 goals or whatever in the 10 games or whatever it was. So it wasn't like it's a good league. And I just think the only thing that was different is I had the puck a lot more on my stick because I can do that in that league. But I had a heck of a time, met some great people, like I said. It was some good hockey.
That's cool. And I can imagine what that'd be like. I mean, you still have guys that are good hockey players. It's not like you can just dangle everybody in the league all of a sudden. But that is interesting how your role changes just because it is a different level of competition. It must have been really fun, too, I imagine, to be able to play with that kind of freedom and not having the professional pressure set in and playing that role that you've gotten used to playing.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's it. I mean, playing hockey in the NHL was fun, but it was a job, right? So as soon as you bring in anything you do, as soon as you make it a job, I mean, you could have a great job. Like, playing a professional sport for a living is incredible. You don't take that for granted, but there's certainly pressures that come along with it because it's a job. And if you're not performing, you won't have that job, and you're not going to get paid. Now you got to find something else to do. So, there's stresses in that. So this was kind of a real time where I can just – get back to enjoying hockey and just playing the game that you love to play. Trying to make the best of the situation. Obviously, it was during the NHL lockout. I'd much rather be in the NHL, but I had a heck of a time in Danbury just continuing to play.
That's cool. It's really cool. Next question is, yeah, you were suspended for a, I will say, so-called late high hit on TJ Oshie, which, to be honest, I looked at the replay and it didn't even look like a penalty to me. Oshie is once again part of a high hit story. From this time, somebody about half your size in Artemi Panarin. So I have a few questions about this. What was it like playing against Oshie? He seems like he has kind of an antagonist, maybe borderline chippy player. And then could you take us through your hit on him and your thoughts on the Panarin hit?
So TJ Oshie is he's a tricky one, because you got to be careful with him, because he does that reverse shoulder and he'll get you. And it doesn't matter, a guy my size, like if I go in and he, a lot of times he kind of plays coy on plays where it almost looks like he doesn't see you coming, and then he kind of, you know, he's pretty solid on his skates. So if you're not ready, he'll drop you. I also think he's one in his career that he's been a great player. For everything I've ever heard, he's an incredible human. Off the ice, he has played with his head down in his career, you know, and I think that's something that he's been on the wrong side of hits at times. You know, mine was one that just kind of went wrong, I guess, because it was, you know, in the situation with my suspension with him, he was coming up the wall in the offensive zone, and I'm in my D zone, and my job is like not to allow him to kind of cut the seam across the top of the circle, and I'm supposed to kind of come down and be there for that. And I saw him coming, and you know, I thought, hey, I'm just going to stand in here and get in the way, and he kind of ran right into me there. And there's certainly head contact on the play, but there's a lot of body contact too. I didn't pick his head.
No.
But it's just tough when you don't see, and that's the thing in the NHL, is like when you don't see a player coming to hit you or standing there, your head is going to have head contact. I got suspended. I actually talked to CG Oshie afterwards. I wanted to apologize. You know, he had concussion issues. Mm-hmm. And so I hit him there. I didn't feel great about it. I wasn't targeting him. Right. So I remember I got his number. One of my teammates knows him well and gave me his number. And I reached out and texted with him. And I apologized. And was like, hey, that was not, you know, I wasn't trying to get you there. And he said, you know, he did say, you know, hey, don't, no worries. You know, I'm all good. Everything's good. I should have had my head up. And he said it, you know, he told me that. And, but, you know, and when I go to that play the other day, it's a similar situation. Like I feel like his head's down. Panarin's coming in there. And this is the thing that kind of gets me. I think that some people try to make head contact nowadays. Listen, we know. We want it to be as safe as it can possibly be for players. We don't want head injuries. We don't want head contact. No matter what your position is, if I hit you and I'm going through you with no resistance, I can hit square in the middle of your body, your chest. At some point, if there's no resistance there, eventually your head's going to get some kind of contact.
Yep.
And I think people get so hung up on, because was there head contact with Panarin and him? Absolutely. But was that it? Were you cutting him off and picking the head? No. I mean, if Panarin would have got a 2-minute penalty there, I could have lived with it, but it's nothing more than that. And, you know, I think that it's a situation, not just for who Artemi Panarin is. It's just, you know, at the end of the day, and I think that's where the league's at now, and we see it, there's a lot of players who put themselves in bad spots. TJ Oshie's been around a very, very long time. I love him as a player, would love to have played with him. He puts himself in bad spots, and that was one of them. And I think that's a perfect example. And maybe that's a perfect example for players to learn from. Because if it was, you know, Matt Rempe who hit him, or if it was, you know, Will Cooley that hit him, now it's all of a sudden, oh, he's a target. Artemi Panarin barely hits anybody. Yeah. Right? Like he barely puts the body on anybody. So that shows you right there, if you're not aware of where other players are on the ice, there could be bad results. And the fact that it was Artemi Panarin kind of shows you that's a perfect example. It could be anybody.
Yep. Absolutely.
I remember last year when the Rangers played the Devils, I think it was
I'm not sure if it was game five or whatever it was, one of the Devils stole it in the offensive zone. It was just him and one of the Rangers defensemen that was in front of Shesterkin, and he just tried to go straight towards the net with his head down. And as a defenseman, what are you supposed to do at the point? Because if you body him, you're gonna hit him in the head, and it's tough. It's terrible that he gets hit in the head, but it's, you know, you put yourself in a vulnerable spot like that, and you know, what else was the defenseman supposed to do?
Yeah, so I think that, you know, I've always asked the question and think if you, it'll never happen, but I've asked the question many times, what if there's supplementary discipline for putting yourself in a bad position, right? Like if there's a play that happens on the ice, you know, maybe player X is the guy who hits him, it wasn't a responsible hit, you know, the results were bad, that player is going to get suspended for, you know, two games. Well, but when we look at the video also, the player did himself no favors. He put himself in a terrible spot in a fast game. And all right, maybe we'll give that player a game. You know what I mean? Like, unless you squeeze it on both ends, because all that does is it allows it. It's the same thing that I think Hockey Canada did this years ago. I think USA Hockey had it for a little while. But the stop signs on the back of youth hockey jerseys. And the stop signs on youth hockey jerseys, the question was like, that's clearly, hey, you see the stop sign, stop, you don't hit. And that was what they were supposed to be teaching the kids. I remember asking kids, because I used to coach youth hockey, say, hey, you guys know what the stop sign means? And they say, it means they can't hit me. They say, that's the wrong thing. You know what I mean?
Right. Like,
they think now that's a tool for them. So
right.
If they got the puck in the corner and I look, I want to make a play. Oh, someone's coming to hit me. I'm going to turn my back because now I know he can't hit me. Well, I mean, it's still hockey. It's a competitive, you know, physical sport. You got to protect yourself. And I think that's something that lacks nowadays. So I think it's, again, I don't think the Players Association would go for it. It's taking more money out of players' pockets. But if there was fines or supplementary discipline for players putting themselves in bad spots or using the rules to help them in a way that's not the way that we want the game to be played, I think they should be penalized for it.
Yeah.
I guess once one of those kids would enter the zone, they could just skate backwards now. And there's a stop sign right there. And they're like, hey, can't touch her now.
If you skate around the ice, if you don't have any care of getting injured, if you skate around the ice with your head down the entire time, by the way that it is, you'll lead the league and draw on penalties for your team. You know, if I went around and didn't protect myself at all and skated hunched over, nobody can literally hit me. Because if you're hitting me in a skating position, and most skating positions, my head is over my toes, you know, you're in that position. Like, you know, you're like, if my fingertips are my head, like, how are you going to hit that without head contact? The head's the first thing. So there's no straight on hits anymore. You know what I mean? Like it's very tough to navigate through. And I think it starts at the grassroots level. I don't think kids are taught how to protect themselves on the ice anymore.
Going to now current Rangers. Last two playoff series, the Rangers were up 2-0 in each one and lost. Now they're up 2-0 again. Do you think this team is different than previous years and will finish the job? Or do you think the Capitals rallied to make this a series?
I do think the Rangers are different now. I think it'll be hard to tell because in prior years, having the lead like they did last year against the Devils or having it in the Eastern Conference Finals the year before against Tampa, those are different teams than Washington. Like, we could say what we want. Washington's been a great story, and they're capable of winning in this series a game or two. Like, I don't see them winning more than that. So it's hard to know really in round one if the Rangers are that much different, because I don't think their opponent is anywhere near as good as the two teams that have knocked them out in prior years, right? So that we'll still have to see what the Rangers are built and made of in round two, which I think, if all things are trending in that direction, will be their hardest series of all. You know, if they get through round two, I think they go to the finals. If round two is going to be tough, I think it's going to be Carolina. Like, I don't see any way around it not being Carolina. And that's going to be a tough one. But, you know, this is a team that I think is learned from the past. They're a little bit of a different team. They got different elements now. I think that they'll take care of business here against the Caps.
Kind of piggybacking on that, you know, there have been a lot of concerns regarding the Rangers' ability to play playoff style hockey recently. You know, too much perimeter game from Panarin in years past, Mika not producing 5-on-5, inability to hold leads. Do you think that the Rangers what are the Rangers doing differently this year? And how is that showing up in the playoffs so far?
I think having that Trocheck line, Lafreniere and Panarin, is really helped this team a lot. And it's taken off a lot of the pressure, because if it wasn't for that line this year, I think, you know, the lack of 5-on-5 play from Mika and Kreides at times would be a bigger factor. Mm-hmm. And, you know, now that they've got some pieces here with Wennberg and Roslovic, they got options. I mean, I still think that if you need to at certain times, you could throw up Kako on the top line. He'd give you a great spark. I also don't think, you know, I think Roslovic gives you a great spark. But I also have seen Roslovic over his career, and he's not a guy that generally is going to be able to stay in line one for 3 months. You know what I mean? Like, he's going to give you a spark. He'll be great. And then he'll kind of subside a little bit. And then so I think that they've got pieces here that Peter Laviolette can kind of move around. And quite frankly, they, you know, I think they just got some elevator players. We've seen all these players. I mean, we've seen Barclay Goodrow playing higher role than he probably intend to use him for at different times. He can do it if you need him. Jimmy Vesey is, I think, one of the most valuable players on this team, the way he can go all over the lineup and provide 100 different things, like a utility player. So, I mean, they've got pieces in here that make them a little bit different. And when you bring in, I'm whether it's Rempe, whether it's, you know, Brodzinski or Will Cooley, they've got players who are a little harder to play against now too. And I think that's something this roster has lacked in the last couple seasons.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah, and it seemed like also last year versus the Devils, every player was looking for someone else to like take the charge. And now, like, this time around, it's like there isn't one player that isn't doing that themselves. Yeah, it just seems like every player is contributing, taking control. And speaking of one of them, Rempe came up big in game one. What has impressed you most about him?
You know, I think he understands his role. I mean, when you see him out there, his everything is his forechecking. You know, he's got to move those feet and move those legs. When he forechecks, he's a difference maker. Defensemen are going to rush pucks. They're going to give bad passes because they're under pressure. And then he's been really good at when he goes in there and gets first contact, he kind of buzzes right to the net front. And then he's going to assess what to do from there. And that's great, right? Just be predictable for your teammates. The one thing I am a little bit concerned about with him is, and what I was coming into the playoffs, is it's a tough spot. I've been there in some way before where – your job is to come in here, be hard to play against, finish every check, be an intimidating force, be a lightning rod out there. So you're basically like, hey, make their lives miserable, toe that line, but you cannot take penalties, right? Mm-hmm. And it's so hard. Like, how are you supposed to be that presence without sometimes crossing the line? Through two games, you know, he's taken two penalties, two goals against. I don't like the calls on either of them, but that's what he's kind of situated. Like, I think he has to realize and hey, this is, he kind of took the hockey world by storm here. Right. And everyone's talking about him. I mean, he's kind of brought this league. A lot of the people out there love the physicality. Like, he's a throwback and he's very valuable for this Rangers team. I don't like the calls that were made, but he's just got to be aware. Like, the stick's got to be on the ice when he's going to finish his checks. Don't hit with your hands. And that's what kind of got him in game two. I see that being the only way he comes out of the lineup is if he just, you know, he's a big body. And if he's taking penalties, I think Peter Laviolette's hands are tied and he's going to have to pull him out of the lineup. But I think they're a much better team with him in the lineup. And hopefully that he doesn't have these referees kind of watching every move he makes so closely.
Seems like they are. Seems like they're I honestly, it's surprising to me to see the focus and the scrutiny that he gets, considering you have like a guy that's been suspended as many times as Tom Wilson has. Doesn't seem like he has as much scrutiny, and it doesn't really make a lot of sense to me. I'm like, this kid comes up, but whatever, that's a separate conversation we don't need to get into. But speaking about Laviolette and the job that he has to do here, what if you were him, what would be your biggest concern for the Rangers this playoffs?
Ooh, biggest concern for them? Yeah. I guess the biggest concern would be the not knowing what the 5-on-5 production is going to look like, you know? I mean, this is still a team that I like, and they're fine. Like, they're not terrible 5-on-5, you know? I'm not trying to make them sound like that. I mean, they won the President's Trophy for a reason. Mm-hmm. I still think, though, that the Rangers that we've seen of the last 3 years and still today, till right now, their mojo goes with their power play. When their power play is zipping it around, those guys look like they're 2 inches taller and 50 pounds heavier. You know, I find, and that goes with why I think Matt Rempe is so important for this lineup, because there's times when the power play, and it's going to slow down at times. Like the power play, every single team, the best teams, they go through stretches where you're gonna have a one for 12 stretch at some point, 1 for 10, like, and you can't lose your mojo. You got to find a way to manufacture energy and do it 5-on-5. So I think that'd be my bigger concern is, all right, you know, can we manufacture offense and manufacture energy 5-on-5? That to me is their only weakness.
Can you talk about the pressure of playing in the playoff games? It seems like people feed off energy and then the others try to shut it out and just play their game. Like in game 7 in 2003, in the finals, you had 3 points. What raised your game in that high pressure moment?
I mean, honestly, it was the veteran players. I didn't know how to react in that situation. So I'm looking around the locker room, how other people are acting. So we had guys on the team in New Jersey that, you know, if you joke around and you have for the last 6 months with this team and you're a clown in the locker room, then you need to be a clown when the pressure's high too. The worst thing could be if you got a guy who's very animated and very social, all of a sudden now being very quiet. And then it just feels weird. It feels like everybody's kind of getting out of sorts. We didn't have that. We had guys, you know, Ken Danico was huge for that, joking around, keeping the room light. And I look across and I see Marty Brodeur, Scott Stevens. They're acting exactly the way they did in preseason, in a game in January or a game in February. They're doing the same stuff. And I also thought to myself, I think it's really important just the mindset you have to be in as a depth player. You understand where you're at in the pecking order, but don't forget what you've always dreamt about. And I never dreamt as a kid, like, hey, I want to play in the NHL playoffs for a Stanley Cup. And I want to be, you know, I want my plus minus to be even in the series. No, I didn't think that. I'm thinking of what scoring a game winner, right? I'm thinking of, you know, being so, like, don't lose sight of that, because the playoffs, that's where the ground is kind of leveled a little bit. And I felt like the mindset I was in was, I'm looking around the room and I'm seeing all the talent that we have, all the guys who've won cups prior. And I'm thinking to myself, nobody's game planning for me. Nobody on the other side's talking about me being a difference. This is right where I want it to be. I know there's zero expectations for me in this situation, but I know what the expectations are in my head. And so I think that gives you a little bit of freedom, right? You're going to fulfill your dream, and it's a mindset. Don't be scared in that moment. You know, try to make the best of it. It could be, you know, it could be the best memory of your hockey career. And it certainly was for me.
Makes a lot of sense. It'd be, I can only imagine what that must be like. It's been in my dream as well, but I think it's passed me by at this point. You're only a few years older than me. So I just have one more question here, and then I think Berkey has one more to wrap it up here. I just want to know, what is it like playing for rival franchises, both as a player and then after you're retired as well? Like, do you still have split allegiances to this day?
So it's funny. I root for all the teams I played for. Sometimes they have to play each other, like last year in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest. I didn't like it. I mean, I got to make predictions on NHL Network. I don't want to pick that. I mean, if they're not playing each other, I mean, like right now, Devils are out, Penguins are out, Minnesota Wild are out, Columbus Blue Jackets are out, the Coyotes aren't even in that city anymore. The Rangers, I'm like, I want the Rangers to win the Cup. Like, if I had, you know, I'm a fan and I go to games, and that's one thing that I've really enjoyed being here in New Jersey is I go over to playoff games and I put my hoodie on, go over, and I'll have popcorn and a beer, and I watch like a fan, and I get to absorb playoff hockey because I never took that in as a player. You know, I was a part of it, right? Like, you could take it in now as a fan. But when they play each other, I want it to go seven. You know, to be honest, last year, though, I did say, because I have a lot of buddies that are Devils fans as well as Ranger fans, and I said, you know what? I kind of feel like this is the Rangers' time. The Devils' future is really bright, and I think that the Devils will have their moment. But right now, it's the Rangers' time, and I was kind of pulling for the Rangers last year, but that wasn't in the cards. But right now, I mean, yeah, I root for the Rangers in these situations. And it's hard when I'm playing on my career, and you got to play against your former team. And when I was on the Rangers playing against the Devils, I felt like, especially the role that I had to play, like I overcompensated probably to show Ranger guys, I'm with you guys now. Like, there's no allegiances on the other side. You know, they're their friends, but not when we play hockey, you know? And so I think that I did a good job with that, probably more than I needed to do. I fought basically every single time we played the Devils. And, you know, the guy who won me a Stanley Cup, I shoved in the Eastern Conference Finals. And, yeah, I mean, it's – so I for me, I felt like I really needed to show that.
Got it.
So final question for me here. Obviously, this is besides the Rangers, but who would be your prediction to win the Stanley Cup this year?
I mean, I picked in my bracket, I picked Dallas. That doesn't look very good right now. I think that the team that's, if they have any kind of defensive conscience, Colorado should be that team. They're that good. And but they've been struggling down the stretch coming into the playoffs with defending and haven't been necessarily getting the goaltending that they need. But I think that though that's probably them. I'd say Colorado or Vegas. I mean, because it's Dallas. I don't know if Dallas comes back from this. I think Vegas ends up beating them. I'd probably say Vegas or Colorado.
Honestly, I'm not sure what happened to Dallas because I watched a fair amount of Dallas this year. And there were times where I thought, no, who can beat this team? And these last two games against Vegas, they don't look like themselves at all. They look like a shell of their former self. It's crazy how hot and cold they are right now.
Yeah, it is. It is. You know, it's tough. I mean, that's what Vegas does. Vegas does that to you, and that's what makes them so tough. You know, I'm not ruling out anybody in the East. I mean, the Rangers got as good of a chance to come out of the East as anybody. It's just, you know, I just, from what I saw this year, I felt like the West was better. And that hopefully for a Rangers team or an Eastern Conference team, let those guys beat the wheels off each other and come into the finals a little bit tired and wounded. So that certainly could play out that way too.
Absolutely.
This might not make sense, but I'm actually sometimes more concerned when the Rangers are the clear favorite. Because it seems like, man, they like thrive when they're the underdog. They want to just smack it in everyone's face. And it just seems like when they're the best team, they sometimes just play to the intensity of their opponent. So if their opponent's on the bottom of the ladder. I haven't been this confident going into a series probably my whole life. This is...
I think that, you know, again, no knock to the Washington Capitals, but I can't imagine them coming back in this series. I mean, they could maybe win a game. But we'll also see, do the Rangers have that killer instinct? And I think their next game and game three is going to be a big indicator.
Absolutely. Robert, thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate you sharing your thoughts. Is there anything you'd like to plug with the NHL Network before we go?
No, I don't think so. We just got, you know, we're covering all the way through the finals, and I've been on, going to be on 4 to 6 NHL Now, and yeah, tune in. We'll keep you updated on what's going on.
Absolutely, will do. Thank you so much again.
Thanks so much.